All right, everybody, welcome into debate night. This is a little bittersweet because this will be our final episode of the season. We are going to be taking a hiatus for the off season. We're gonna have another podcast starting up though in replacement of this. Hunter, why don't you tell them about it real quick?
Yeah, it's going to be called nothing else than the off season. The off season podcast is essentially going to be a hodgepodge of user submitted stories, topics, questions, and I'm sure that will lead to a bunch of random banter from all of us, all the different hosts that'll be on here. It'll be super exciting. It's going to start next week on Thursdays is when the off season will come out. So be sure to tune in, hear some funny disc golf stories. I've been reading some of the suggestions. First off, if you want to find the suggestion, you can head over to our Facebook. I'll also post it on our Instagram story today, so you can click to suggest and put your own stories in there. They can
It'll
be anonymous
also be
if
in
you
the
want.
Description of this video, yeah.
It'll also be in description. That's a great point, Brody. That's a good idea. I'll put it in the description of this video, too, and you can suggest there. We've already got some very interesting and funny suggestions that I think will lead to some fun entertainment for you all this offseason. So
yeah, it's going to be great. So make sure to tune into that this week. But for now, this is our final episode of Debate Night for the season. We'll be back next season once things kick off again on the tour, but this will be it for this. So winner takes all. Sound good, everybody? Winner takes
Sounds
all.
Good. Yeah,
winner takes okay. All. Grand champ. All right, we're going to hop right into it. We had quite a few good topics arise from the tour championship and that final week. And just kind of as the season has started to simmer down. So we're going to hop into the first one here. So we've talked about this throughout the year, but I think with the way that the season ended, it never really clarified itself. And that is the MPO Player of the Year race. I think we all secretly hoped this would present itself a little more clearly. Somebody would maybe win once or twice more, but it didn't happen. The players in question didn't really win anymore. And now the season's over. So I've got a two-part question here. Number one, who do you think deserves Player of the Year in your opinion and why? And then number two, who do you think is actually going to win? Because remember, this is only a player and media vote. So it is going to be quite subjective. So give me both your answers to those, Brody.
Well, the first thing, I'll push back a little bit on what you said. I think this is actually a good thing. The fact that we actually can have debate over who was the best player throughout the entire MPO season, I think is exciting. I think from looking on social media comments, seeing how people, there isn't a standalone person, right? You switch over to FPO, there's no discussion. It's not interesting. It was Kristen Dattar halfway through the season. So I actually like that there wasn't a, Isaac didn't win out or Calvin didn't win out to where they just basically like sealed the deal and that was it. Also, the fact that we don't really know how people decide this. There hasn't been that much chatter from the people voting as far as the media goes on what they think is. Also, do we know all the media votes? Do they end up posting who all the media people are?
No.
Or are they just like behind doors?
It's behind doors.
Yeah, not a big fan of that. It would be nice to kind of know who's actually getting a vote here. With that being said, who deserves MPO Player of the Year? I think it goes to Calvin Heimberg. I think that's a pretty simple one for me because of what I feel is Player of the Year worthy. And that is, what did someone look like their resume from the beginning of the season to the end of the season? And yes, you can put emphasis on wins if you want, but to me, that's not what this award is. It wasn't just who got the biggest wins. It wasn't just who won the most. It's simply who played the best from the beginning of the season to the end. And if you look at everyone's resume, which you guys did a great job of actually posting, the only thing you guys left out was Calvin's 22 top 10s to Isaac Robinson's, I think, 11 or whatever it was. So he doubled them up there. That kind of just shows the consistency he had over the season. Who do I think is going to win? I think most players are going to probably vote for Calvin. And then also Calvin being probably out of those three guys in question, Calvin, Gannon, Isaac, Calvin is the more popular player. So I think the media will probably side with him as well.
Yeah, certainly could definitely swing that way for the voting. Dustin, what do you think?
Yeah, for me, it's a three-horse race between Gannon Burr, Calvin Heimberg, and Isaac Robinson for Player of the Year, as far as like who I have in the discussion. I think there was a brief period where Simon kind of had his name in the hat because he had a couple of wins, but I think as the season drug on, I think that these are the three that kind of separate themselves from the pack. If I'm comparing Calvin to Gannon, I kind of lean on the Calvin side, just like Brody. Yes, I do think Gannon does have one additional elite win that Calvin does not have. So you could maybe make an argument there that Gannon just has more wins, and thus maybe you tilt him in that direction if you value wins that much. But for me personally, wins are the most important category, but that's the only category that Gannon beats Calvin in, and it's only by one elite win. I mean, if you want to throw silvers in there, that changes it a little bit, but I'm just going elites. But after that, if you look at the additional podium finishes, the additional like top fives and top tens, the average finish on tour, you know, the fact that Calvin never finished worse than 16th and you had three finishes from Gannon outside the top 25, like the consistency just rides with Calvin in that point. And so I personally feel like Calvin wins that. So then it comes down to Calvin versus Isaac. And at that point, I think it just comes down to how much do you value the major wins over the elite wins? Like how do you, like, I know that at times Hunter has kind of said that they're maybe worth 1.5 wins or they're worth 2 wins. And so technically he's got 3 or 4 wins, not just 2. And really that gets a little bit nitty gritty on how you want to weigh that. But even still, for me, I think Calvin's consistency reigns supreme over the two majors, because outside of those two majors, yeah, Isaac had some additional podiums, he had some other top tens and stuff, but I just think that Calvin was more consistent, had a better body of work throughout the entire year. So that's who I pick. As far as who I think the players will pick, it seems like I've already seen a lot of players piping up for Calvin on social media. So it seems like a lot of players are leaning in that direction, but I think the media might go with Isaac just because he won two majors, and 10 years from now, that's what we're going to remember more than like the consistency of the season.
Fair points, fair points. All right, Hunter, I think you might disagree. What do you have to say?
Well, yeah, I don't think there's a wrong answer here. I think Gannon, Isaac, Calvin, there's arguments for all three. Personally, I think between Gannon and Isaac, you got to go with Isaac just because 2 major wins versus 3 elite wins. Silver wins are here nor there, but I think it's a tight race between them two, but it really just it comes down to when you think of player of the year, do you think of wins or do you think of consistency? I think of wins. I think every week players show up with the goal of winning, and I think the player that accomplished that the most is the player that deserves this award the most. And therefore, I think that belongs to Isaac Robinson, mainly because of the major title. They're the most prestige in our sport. There's the most pressure on them, the most media coverage. They're the titles people want to hold the most. They also have more golf than your average event. I know elite pluses are a thing too, but they have more golf, and Isaac consistently won 2 out of the 4 of those. And I think 2 of them in a single season is ridiculous. And that's being overlooked for the sake of consistency in a lot of areas. And so for me, I think that player of the year goes to the guy whose season is going to be remembered for decades and decades. And that's a guy who won 2 out of 4 majors. That's a guy who is a world champion now. That's a guy who is Isaac Robinson. With that all being said, the Pro Tour award will 100% go to Calvin Heimberg. It'll probably be a near unanimous decision. And he deserves it as well. I think, like I said, it's just 2 different ways of thinking. His season was incredible from a different viewpoint. The consistency to do it from start to finish, always put your name in a hat, always be up there. That's unreal. And that's a thing that 98% of players would love to have. The 2% of players that wouldn't love to have it are the ones like Isaac Robinson who had 2 majors. I think they would rather have that season over Calvin's. So that's why I choose Isaac. But I can understand Calvin, and I think that's who the award will end up going to.
Yeah, going to be very interesting. I think it's interesting that, yeah, I think Gannon's name has almost got tossed out of the hat for most people, and he's the wins leader, which is just crazy to think that that's...
If Isaac didn't exist, I would be on Team Gannon, but Isaac winning 2 majors is just ludicrous.
Okay. Yeah, it's interesting. It's a tough one when Calvin had a very special season, but it also was a what could have been season. 5 second places. You know, there was a lot of opportunities. It is almost just a bummer that he didn't win more, because it could have been really something. But still, yeah, not really a wrong answer. I agree. I think the award will end up going to Calvin. All right. So we're gonna move into some tour championship stuff a little bit here. We had a little bit of a drama situation go down. Day 2 FPO, the Tour Championship. People started picking up on a situation that was caught by the hot mics. They had hole 18 like live recorded on YouTube, and there was hot mics, and they started hearing some bickering coming from one of the FPO cards that had Katrina Allen on it, Jessica Weiss, Holland Hanley. I'm not sure who the 4th was on that card.
Ella.
That's right. I misspoke. I meant Ella Hansen instead of Holland Hanley. I'm not sure who the other player was.
Jessica Weiss was there too.
Jessica right? Weiss, Kat, Ella. Yeah. I'm not sure.
Brody, your mic's muted.
Yeah, Brody also muted yourself.
It was Jessica Weiss, Ella Hansen, Katrina Allen. Do we know who the 4th was?
That's what I'm wondering. I'm not sure. Not really relevant to the story. But in any case, so there was a verbal altercation. We actually ended up, if you went to Reddit, you could find the UDisc live scorekeeper kind of had a better documentation of the story. So there was people transcripting. Basically, what happened was there was an argument based around a score that Jessica Weiss thought she took. Katrina Allen disagreed. They counted. It was actually one that neither of them thought. Kat thought she had a 10. Jessica thought she had an 8. They ended up counting. It was a 9. Kat made a remark about her not being able to count after playing disc golf for so long. That wasn't taken very well. Some people say that it got to the point where marshals had to intercede, and so there wasn't a fight. There was clearly verbal altercation. We heard, you could hear that much. So my question here is, does Katrina Allen, from what we know, and you can kind of maybe draw your own conclusions, does she deserve any kind of punishment for the verbal altercation that took place on hole 18? And then where do you think that line is before fines and suspension should be handed out? Where do you think, how do you think this should be handled? Dustin.
Yeah, this is a tough one to be because it's kind of messy and we're only getting like a snapshot of probably the entire situation because this was on hole 18. So we have no idea what was going on throughout the course of the round. Like I had read some stuff on Reddit about how apparently like they had some exchanges throughout the course of the round. They've had a history of having exchanges in the past, even before this year. So I'm not really sure what the relationship is there or what all the facts are, I guess. Like we're only getting to hear a little bit of stuff that we saw on YouTube and getting people posting about it on Reddit. And we don't even know how accurate that stuff being posted on Reddit is. So we have to be a little bit careful. Obviously, if stuff like that is going on during the round, there is a rule in the PGA about courtesy that you can call on somebody if they're engaging in shouting and cursing and being rude, where at first it's a warning and then you start doing stroke penalties. So, I mean, that's always a power that marshals and players have throughout the course of a round to penalize a player if they're having issues. Obviously, we have seen in other professional leagues and sports where if there is verbal abuse or verbal altercations between players and fans or players and officials, and things of that nature, that there can be fines that are thrown in there if it gets to like too severe of a level. I know there's some examples out there over the last couple of years that have happened in some of those pro leagues. And then we obviously had the whole situation with Nico, right, where he had a verbal altercation with the marshal at the European Open last year, and it got intense, and he wound up getting suspended for a period of time. Now, I will say Nico's was a bit different because it bordered on the line of being almost a physical altercation. Like, he got in that dude's face. It looked like you could certainly, I don't know if he was necessarily actually threatening violence, but you could certainly interpret it that way if you were just someone kind of watching and not understanding who Nico is or, you know, how far he goes and things of that nature. So I think that was a little bit different. This just seems like back and forth between players. And I think it's hard to make a call on an actual punishment when it's as messy as this one is. And when we don't have a complete story or a complete list of facts to go off of to make a decision.
Yeah, I'll be curious to see if anything ends up coming from it. Hunter, what are your thoughts?
From the evidence that's out there that we can actually verify from the live stream, no, I don't think there's any punishment that's deserved here. I mean, the altercation you can hear on the live stream, yes, it's heated. Yeah, there's words thrown out from both sides that I don't think should have been said. And it was just a heated altercation. But it's from the live stream. It lasts like 2 minutes. It seems like everyone just kind of dissipates and walks away. And if that's all that happened, no, there's no need for punishments. There's no need for it to even be as big of a story as it truly is. But with that being said, if there was some physical intimidation or a physical threat of some type where a marshal actually had to step in as being alleged online and break them up and separate them out, then yeah, absolutely. There should be some type of punishment, fine, whether it's a suspension, whatever. The suspension side's a little weird because it's the start of the off season. So this is almost an opportunity where like the PDGA could like make a stance, slap on the wrist, month long suspension for the PDGA for this off season. And it actually has no effect on the end of the day, the season starting next year. To like, it could be just a make a stance type thing. But I think the line before fines and suspension to get to that side, because in my opinion, I don't think there's going to be any repercussion for this unless, as Dustin said, there is a lot more going on that we haven't heard about. From what we can verify, though, no. Where the line is, I think that's a really tough one to just set a fine line in the sand. I think these rules should be a bit ambiguous so that it can be situation by situation. Because if you make it too much of a strict line in the sand, there's going to be some that like it has to turn physical. But then there's some like shouting matches that never turn physical, but might as well have and could have the same type of effects as a physical one. Or if it's a physical thing, then you might have the situation that happened to Bradley Williams where he shoulder checked Matt Dollar and got a huge suspension that was blown out of proportion years ago. Obviously, that was backed by a body of work that led to that suspension. But that standalone incident, you know, I think that that's why it should be a bit ambiguous so that you can have marshals have these decisions be made on a case-by-case basis. So that's kind of where I think it should be. I definitely think that the stuff should be put in place, though, to have fines be a part of this and not just suspensions, because then people whip into shape real quick.
Yeah, money certainly talks. All right, Brody, you had a point from earlier.
Well, yeah, I'll mention that. So first things first is there has been reports or some, you know, rumors, I guess, not reports, rumors that reports have been submitted to the PDJ disciplinary committee. Those are the people that are handling this. The Disc Golf Pro Tour will not be handling this at all. That's straight from Jeff Spring. So they will not be involved. If anyone does decide to do something, it will be on the PDGA side. I know from one side of the story, I'm still waiting to hear back from the other. I know from one side of the story that nothing has been submitted at this point. So if nothing does end up getting submitted, then I don't think there's going to be any sort of suspensions or stuff. If something ends up, if a report ends up getting submitted, then we'll kind of see what the PDGA does. I don't know from the stories, from the info I have gotten so much, and hopefully I get a little bit more, I don't think there is anything necessarily here for suspensions, for fines. I would love to hear the examples Dustin have of players getting fined for trash talking or talking vulgarly to other players in other leagues. I think those are mostly when you have interactions with fans or when you have interactions with officials,
right,
or maybe with coaches. Player to player, the line there for majority of other sports is pretty, like Hunter said, it's pretty like ambiguous. It's pretty open. As long as there's not any sort of physical, and I think the Nico situation is a completely different situation. That was against a PDGA marshal, and not only did he have an altercation with him verbally, but he then also basically, you know, if you use whatever words you want, but he basically like stalked the guy, right? He basically like didn't let the guy get out of his sight.
Step away from me. Step away from me.
Yeah.
Step away.
So that's hey, a completely careful. Different situation. Yeah. Cause again, it's not player versus player. And then I have to disagree with Hunter and the fact that he's saying like, this isn't a big story. No, this is a big story. When else have we talked about this? Right. We always hear and think about like, it's not being la la butterflies and cupcakes on tour. And this is the first time that, and this is what I've been saying, man, the more media that starts covering disc golf, this would not have ever been brought up if we didn't have that live standstill camera on hole 18. If there was no camera there, you would have had maybe some person there that maybe makes a post on Reddit, but there's no real evidence. So it kind of just falls to wayside. We actually have, I was going to say video evidence, but we have audio of this altercation. So we know it happens. We can hear what was said. This is a big story, and stuff like this is going to continue to happen. The more media, the more presence in disc golf, because yes, it is not all rainbows and butterflies all the time. And on top of that, am I surprised that this happened at the tournament where the money was the biggest? As far as if you take a big number on hole 18, you went from potentially winning, losing a couple thousands of dollars, right? This is what I think sports is all about, is the fact of like, how can you handle your emotions when you just like lost thousands of dollars? That's what we're
seeing. True. It's a lot harder to go along with somebody like potentially getting their score wrong. Especially in that scenario when it could be thousands of dollars decided by you writing down the wrong score.
Like, I've been called disc golf TMZ, I guess, one too many times to take these as big stories. They scare me.
No, I mean, it's a big story. Cause we've never had something like this. We haven't talked about it.
I agree. That's a fair point.
Year,
Hunter, so. Hunter wants to it to be a big story, but he's just trying to stay away from the TMZ accusations. Yeah. He's been fighting the accusations.
You can only
years.
Be called disc golf TMZ so many
ever,
times before.
Ever since the Ricky contract, man, he's retired from that life.
Do people not realize what TMZ is? Like,
no, they don't. They just say it.
They don't report on the stuff that happens on the fields, guys. They report on like, hey, we saw this person holding hands with this person leaving this restaurant. Like, this happened on hole 18's green.
Yeah,
this is not TMZ.
This
is
on
like,
SportsCenter.
Yes, 100%.
Come on, guys.
Come on, guys. Watch your TMZ. Like, yeah. I do.
Have you ever been on TMZ, Brody?
Yeah.
I hope not. I have no idea, though.
That's I think this would have been a much bigger deal, though, if had it have happened actually on the main broadcast.
That
like,
would have been
on
like
a card.
It's only a matter
of
time, though.
With it being a live stream of like one hole, like a featured hole thing, like probably not as many people saw it. So that's why
it's only a matter of time. That money keeps going up, and somebody's like, this person just cost me $5,000. Yeah, the gloves will come off. All
the
right.
The wrong foot fault call might lead to fisticuffs.
I'm saying, dude. Yeah, with all the self officiating, it can get ugly. All right, we're going to hop on to a little bit of free agency talk because we were talking about it on Grip Locked on Monday, and UltiWorld always does a really awesome free agency tracker. They make it as accurate as it can be. Obviously, there's the information pool around disc golf contracts is like, I don't know, trying to read a treasure map half the time. It's incredibly cryptic. But from what information we do have, there's a pretty insane list of potentially expiring contracts at the end of 2023. Now, some of those players may have already extended. We might not know, but we can speculate based on what the information is we have. And there is a long list. We obviously have known about Gannon Burr and Eagle McMahon and some of the really interesting ones, but there's more than I ever thought. So I had our contestants refer to that list, and my question is, who are your top free agents to watch this offseason and why? It doesn't necessarily have to be the highest profile, but maybe just the most interesting stories. And we're going to say this is not including the obvious choices of Gannon and Eagle, because those two will clearly be the favorites, in my opinion. You can counter that if you wish as well. Hunter, what do you think?
Yeah, so I'm going to kick it off. Well, actually, I want to do two honorable mentions. I don't think either of these players are going to move, but if they do, I think it would be very fascinating, which is Vino Makkala and Nicholas Antola, mainly because in Europe, they are very, in general, they're very synonymous with Prodigy and Discmania, but especially
Vino's
in the European.
Restructured already.
Sorry? Vino's I was told to go off the list, man. I was told to go off the list.
The list Vino is with Prodigy until 2026.
Yeah, he restructured to 2026.
Oh, said 2023. Anywho, Nicholas Antola then. These are my side points, guys. I'm getting to my main
list. I'm just trying to get
the real information out there. I'm sorry.
It's true. That was just a correction. It's fine. I'm
about to change my what player needs to turn their life around to Brody Smith here in a second. But the referring to this
list. If you make it that far.
That's fair. Nicholas Antola, I think he would be interesting if he left Discmania because he's so synonymous in the European market with Discmania, but I don't think he's going to, so I'm not going to use him as my answer. The one I'm going to use here, I think Paige Pierce is the most fascinating free agent this offseason because her performance and kind of carefree, who cares about winning attitude pre-injury was already concerning for someone that's expected to be a dominant face of a brand. And then there's a lot of questions surrounding her post-injury as far as recovery and possible long-term effects on the game, both physically and mentally, because can she trust the ankle in general? Will that affect how she plays? What happened to her form? Lots of stuff like that. So I don't think it'll be interesting to see where she ends up, but I think it'll be interesting to watch how Discraft handles the extension, how long that extension's for. If details get released prior to this year, you would have expected her to get the absolute bag and a long extension. Now there's a lot of questions. And there's also, it's an interesting one because Missy Gannon's contract's also allegedly up. And so it's a weird one of Discraft has to decide where they're putting their eggs, which basket, who's getting the big deal, who's getting the smaller deal. I think that's going to be a very fascinating dynamic to watch this offseason.
I would agree. I think that that is going to be very interesting to see. Brody, who do you think is going to be fascinating to watch?
Well, you also left off Hall and Hanley there too, Hunter.
And Viler and Amanda
Hunter.
They got all kinds of contracts as
well.
I think
Holland's a much bigger story than Valerie. Valerie didn't really do too much this season. She's coming
Hold
off
up.
An injury
I,
as well.
You paused me. According to the list I was sent, Vino Makkala through 3 years through 2023 Prodigy.
Keep scrolling up.
That's the list on here. I was just using the list.
Keep scrolling up. They have an updated version. He's on there twice. They should have deleted
that.
How
is that my fault? How is that my fault he's on there twice?
You did.
I don't think you should be penalized for it. We were just trying to get the correct info out there.
I scrolled down.
Sure. Okay. I mean, I had him on my list too because I was like, oh, wow, it's really interesting because he actually is the most popular player in Europe and potentially one of the top five popular players in all of disc golf. We just don't really know because we're in the States. But I think Paige Pierce is a great answer here. I didn't realize that her contract was up. I think Hunter nails it in the fact that, like, what does I it's so hard for me to think that she leaves Discraft because Discraft has put so much into her, right? Her name is on Raptors, which I don't even know if those even like have, do we have those? Do we have Paige Pierce Raptors?
Don't think so. No.
Yeah. I mean, I saw her name, like her signature name on Raptors. And I mean, it's hard for me to think that they have so much built in with her. You mean it's always a passion. Come on. Yeah. What are we doing here? So I don't think she goes anywhere, but I'm with Hunter in the fact of it will be interesting to kind of see how they treat her contract compared to Missy's, compared to Holland's. When I would say Missy right now, as far as like playing wise go, probably using Hunter's word, has the most momentum going into next season. I think Niklas is a good answer. Yeah, why not? One that I think is really fascinating is Matt Orem. I think him being on West Side Dis, a company that doesn't really necessarily ring true to that many people, I could say. You don't really see that much fanfare. And I guess West Side Dis people, I don't know if you probably have a nickname. You probably do. You can come for me West in the comments. Side?
There you go.
But they post that YouTube video every once. He posts like practice round YouTube videos on West Side. But other than that, you don't really see much from Matty O. And he has one of the better personalities. If you go and watch the interview that we did with him on Tour Life, it was one of people's favorites that we did all season. I think if he finds a company that is willing to put him out there more, that could be a really, really interesting one. And then the other one that, I mean, there's... I agree with you, Trevor. I'm not going to list all the ones until Dustin goes because I don't want to take his steal, but we should list all these names because I was shocked with how many people
crazy
are going. The other big one here, Aaron Gossage, and I'll say this confidently, Aaron Gossage is the best player off the tee, and I don't know if anyone is actually that close. Tee to green, Aaron Gossage is the best player.
He's a beast. He can putt,
if man. If he can get his putting going this offseason, he might change it. I don't know exactly. But he was so close to winning so many different events. He's someone right there. And his contract's up with Discraft. And it'll be interesting to kind of see, you know, Discraft has massive contracts with all these different players, right? They've got AB. They got Adam, who just had a great tour championship. What happens with Aaron Gossage this offseason? That will be very interesting to see as well.
Gossage has a little bit of a brand. I could totally see another company wanting to make him more of a centerpiece because he is super underrated. All right, Dustin, what do you think is going to be interesting? I know you love Matty O. So.
Yeah, I mean, I had him on the top of my list. I had a few that I picked like three for each division, basically. I'm not going to like sit on all of them for too long, though. But yeah, Matty O, definitely got to put him up there. I mean, this dude has been so good for so long. You know, second at Worlds 2005, and has been very consistent when he has been active on tour. He's been pretty consistently in or near the top 10 most events that he plays, and in like world rankings, things of that nature. Obviously, he just got a first elite win, so we got a little bit of extra pop behind him with an MVP Open win. As Brody said, the dude has a really marketable personality. He's very quirky, he's very funny. You never know what he might say. When he does say something, it's always hilarious. Even if you don't understand what he said, you still laugh at it because he just gets you like that. And I mean, the practice rounds he was doing with Westside this year, that was partnered with, like, I think Ace Run Productions for some of them, and I think Gatekeeper did a couple as well. Those were all brilliant. And when he's on Skins matches, it's brilliant. If, like, you know, Brody said, if you get a company, because he's not going to do it himself, like, he's not going to go out there and make his own YouTube channel or be like super active on his Instagram, like, personally. But if somebody takes control of that social media and really knows how to leverage it properly, the dude's incredibly marketable. So, like, yeah, I do think Matty O, I think he's likely going to get extended if I had to guess, but like, if someone can pick him up, I think he's a huge name. Niklas, I agree with that one as well. I mean, he's still very young, he's had a great couple of seasons. He seems to be trending up performance wise. He may not be as big of a brand though, when it comes to like marketability. He's not in a lot of content. You don't really get to see his personality too much. So I'm not sure on that front, but yeah. Then another name I'm going to name is Alden Harris. I mean, he's actually up right now for Prodigy. The dude has crazy clout behind him when it comes to the content side of things. And he's a pretty good performer as well. He's had his moments for sure. So I'll throw Alden in the mix as well. Now for FPO, I want to go with Holland Handley. I think she'll likely stick with Discraft. It seemed like she was leaning that way in some of the interviews that she's done, but she did bet on herself. She signed a 1-year deal and she obviously performed very well. She won Throw Pink, an almost major. She had 5 additional podium finishes. She had a lot of other top 5s and top 10s. Does some cool tutorial content on Instagram. It seems to be pretty active on socials as well. So I think there's still lots of room for her to grow both in performance and in marketability. And then, yeah, like people have already said it. Technically, Paige Pierce is up. Technically, Missy Gannon is up. You know, those are obviously huge names for Discraft. And then I'm gonna back on Brody a little bit. I think Valerie Mandahano, even though her season was short due to the injury, when she came back, I mean, she won Idlewild and had several of their top 10 finishes. She's still a fantastic performer in the sport. And I think if she can be fully healthy for next year, she could be a huge name for somebody.
She's definitely, she is a kind of like, are you willing to bet on her type player? Because she's a proven
sure.
winner.
No, I agree with that.
But it's definitely, I think Missy Gannon, Hahn Hanley, more sure bets if they actually do hit the market.
They're also a little more marketable, I think, too, from, yeah. from it's, what it's, they do.
Well, what about the
Holland,
the
whole, for sure, yeah.
The whole 18 scandal, we don't know how that's going to affect Holland's sellability. You know, did it cross inbounds? Did it not?
A couple names, too, that we left off just real quick, because, yeah. again, this list is extensive. Chris Clemens, I mean, he's a top guy.
He's a
Bradley Bradley Williams, almost, I mean, he was the only one that was putting up a test at USCGC, also has been close at a couple tournaments. Also won, what event did he win? Was that 2 years ago he won Preserve? Last year?
Last year, I think.
Last year. And then you got the proctologist, James Proctor. He did a 1 year deal, kind of like, hey, let's see if this works out.
He already extended.
I think he's with
who?
TSA. He extended
his Infinite deal wasn't listed on there. I think that's the main deal because, like, Clash and TSA, like,
well,
all
I know
that
he extended with ThoughtSpace for sure
with Clash, but Clash isn't.
I don't
there.
Know if I don't
have no idea.
It was publicly posted that he extended with TSA. I'll just say that, but yeah.
But I don't think that. Yeah, I don't know that
he can do other deals because it's like a open bag thing. Yeah.
And then Gavin Babcock did 1 year with Dismania. So that's another one that
would
be interesting to kind of see what happens with that. So, yeah.
Gianna Corvus contracts up. Legend.
I thought this offseason was going to be kind of like quiet and it might not be.
Yeah.
It might not be.
Well, realistically, last offseason should have been quiet. Simon, like, gave us something because like there wasn't a ton of people up and then we also
AB
had
moving too was kind of big.
We had AB and then the Gannon thing, like that wasn't supposed Gannon to be too, a thing like that made it a lot of stories, but this year the floodgates are open.
I also think honorable mention Macy Vela Diaz. I put her in there too, good performer.
And I think the other Amanda Hanna might be up as well, Alexis,
and something to take into account as well is I think the COVID boom, whatever you want to call it, when like discs were going nuts and everyone was able to sell everything, I think that has officially kind of like this last season, that didn't exist at all. Like I think before that, there was still maybe a little bit of a whatever you want to call it, backdraft or whatever. This last season, this I think is kind of more of like what players are worth. And so that also is going to be very fascinating to see like what ends up happening. I don't think we're going to get any numbers this offseason of like players' contracts. I don't think so, but it will be interesting to see just if there is movements and stuff, because I think companies have a much better grasp after this season of like what certain players are worth and what players aren't worth.
I do think if like someone signs Gannon or Eagle to like a massive deal, maybe that number gets out there, but it would have to be massive.
The only way we get numbers is if Gannon or Eagle goes to somewhere like a Discraft or Dynamic to where they've already been proven that they will release numbers. Nobody.
Yeah, but will they release?
They will only release like,
Latitude also release numbers. So
that's what I was just saying. Will Gannon going to somewhere and being like, we're paying him $200,000 a year?
It would have to be a lot of money. I would say if the total contract value exceeds $1 million, it depends on the length too. But like if Gannon went somewhere and it was like, 3 years,
10 years.
If it was 3 years, $2 million, I think they would announce something like that. It just depends on how good it looks to them and what they decide. I hope we get at least some numbers because I would love to get a reference to what the market is thinking in player value because we just have no idea after that spending.
I'll text you off camera.
Okay,
Discmania just got that House of Discs money too. So
yeah, dude, they've got that private investment, that private equity. They're about to drop a bomb. They're gonna
also
Latitude
needs a marquee MPO player, so I feel like they might.
It's also true.
Make a big move.
Latitude's got that. Yeah, they got that House of Discs money too. Yeah.
Exactly.
All right. Speaking of money and deals, we're going to hop into our last subject for Rapid Fire. The Pro Tour recently reached a new deal with CBS Sports Network. Now, to be clear, that's not the CBS National Broadcast Network. That is CBS Sports Network. There's a difference, people. To the air for hour-long broadcast. That's four individual hour-long broadcasts over the next few months, showing off some of the biggest events from this season, kind of like they've done before. It seems like they're sticking to that hour summary, almost like let's make the first 20 minutes of disc golf, how disc golf started documentary type thing.
So they're going to be doing that start. I think it starts next month potentially. But so my question is, you know, we've tried this a few times now. We've done ESPN, we've done CBS Sports Network. I think the rumors were that, you know, there was no money even exchanged for these deals. They're kind of just like, hey, we'll give you the airtime and we've done it.
When Dynamic Disc did it, in 2021,
they paid for it. Yeah. The Pro Tour, I think the one they did, I think was a no money exchange. But
no
yeah.
money with ESPN. You're right.
So in any case, do you think these broadcasts are actually a viable strategy to grow the sport, or are they just not even worth the effort? And if there's money being exchanged, you can add that in there as well. But yeah, because we've kind of just been trying it for a while. So what do you think, Brody?
So I'm going to say if there's money being exchanged, right, if this is the Dynamic Disc deal, I would think that that money could be used in different ways to market way better. Like you said, this is not a TV channel that anyone can just pop on and watch. You actually have to have DirecTV or some sort of like subscription to even get this channel to begin with. And I was just actually curious because I was like, I don't really ever watch CBS Sports. So I was like, let me just see what's going on in prime time this week. Okay, so you have
the Liberty football game
on Friday. At 7 p.m. on Friday, you have the 2023 TC American powered by Skip Barber Indianapolis Motor Speedway. At 8:30, you have the 2023 Pirelli GT4 America Indianapolis Motor Speedway. And then on Saturday at 3:30, you've got the USF versus UConn game. And you've got at 7, the Utah State versus San Jose State. This is a channel that people aren't just like randomly like scrolling through and being like, oh, wow, that looks incredible. Like, I want to watch that. Like, you are a San Jose State alumni and you want to watch the game, you're like, where do I watch it? Oh, it's on CBS Sports. So I don't think if we're paying money for this, I don't think that makes any sense. If this is something that CBS Sports is like, hey, our programming is super, I mean, they're 24 hours, so they have to have stuff to put on there. If they have worked out a deal where it's like, hey, we can just show your stuff, whatever, I think, why not, right? Like, that's great. That's awesome. But I don't think they're paying the Disc Golf Pro Tour, and I hopefully the Disc Golf Pro Tour isn't paying them, because I don't think this is something that all of a sudden it's like, hey, we're on CBS Sports. And I wonder, it's like, do people know what CBS Sports is compared to CBS? Because those two things are drastically different. So people like getting super excited about this. This is equivalent to being like, hey, it's on ESPN Plus. Like, hundreds of events are on ESPN Plus every day. That doesn't mean like, oh my gosh, disc golf is going to take off. So I don't think this is a bad thing if we're not paying for it. But at the same time, if we are paying for it, I think maybe the money should be. Yeah. I would say it's a bad thing if we are paying for it.
It's definitely the Pro Tour definitely loves the pop that they get behind having like CBS, like the logo and everything, and it looks really good. But like you mentioned, with what's on CBS Sports Network, it's definitely like there.
I mean, Ultimate Frisbee College, we were on CBS Sports.
Yeah. The real question is, where does it sit in the channel guide? Is it right next to the other sports networks? Because then that's not too bad. But if it's all the way at the end in like the 800s, useless.
No, I think it's in their whole CBS network thing. I think
where
it's
is
in
it?
Like
YouTube TV, Hunt?
It's YouTube TV is a custom guide. So for me, it's near the top because Liberty football's on it. But yeah, it depends.
Tough to say.
It's how much you watch it.
I think on DirecTV, it's in the clump of all those because CBS has a bunch, like their network is massive. So I think it's in the clump of all those.
Big factor. Dustin, what do you think about these broadcasts?
I mean, I'm kind of torn on it. Just like Brody said, as long as it doesn't cost much money and effort, aka, you know, they're not having to pay CBS to be on the time slot, and as long as it's like minimal effort for the production teams that you're already salarying or whatever, you know, it's okay, I guess. I mean, I suppose it could help disc golf reach a new audience, because the current disc golf audience is very much already on DGN or on YouTube or on streaming services. So if you're trying to expand to a different audience that maybe aren't looking at disc golf in those outlets, and they happen just to come across this while they're watching something else, then yeah, maybe you do happen to reach a couple new eyes. But I do feel like a lot of times it turns into disc golfers who are already a part of the ecosystem who just happen to go check it out on TV because they think, oh, that's neat, disc golf is going to be on TV. But maybe it helps them introduce it to their friends or family or something. I don't know. So I could see it maybe being somewhat beneficial, but I don't like there being a lot of effort or money being put into it. I think if it helps develop a relationship for a broadcasting rights deal down the line. I mean, that could be great. I just don't know that the viewership is really there for them to be able to make that type of move to actually sell the broadcasting rights to a service like that. And, you know, I think the bulk of the efforts for the Pro Tour should really be on improving the experience for DGN subscribers, finding a way to leverage their viewership from JoMeds and free broadcasts to get better deals and to try to bring those people onto the DGN subscriber base, if that's really what they're going to put all their eggs on as far as revenue goes. I think they could also expand their own free YouTube content on the Disc Golf Pro Tour channel to try to expand more people to come to the DGN subscriber base. And I also think that they should be focusing more on a hybrid streaming model where they give one stream for free to help boost those live viewership numbers, and then maybe put other stuff behind a paywall for those hardcore fans. And I think it's also worth mentioning, and this is something that I think Brody's mentioned in the past as well, kind of indirectly in some of his own content, is there's a lot of disc golfers out there who already know what the sport is, but don't know anything about the Disc Golf Pro Tour and are not a DGN subscriber. And I think trying to reach out to those people is something that needs to be more of a focus with marketing as opposed to these TV deals, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly. And yeah, I'd be interested to know what the viewership ends up being on these, but I think it is like 7 o'clock time slot's not too bad, but it still feels like it's like the, you hope somebody's like, huh, disc golf, and clicks
what
on
day
it.
What is it? Do we know?
I think they were weekdays, but 7 PM Eastern. So like good time slot. Hunter, what do you think about the broadcast? Like them, hate them?
No, I mean, it's not a viable strategy to grow the sport, as the question was worded, unless they're getting the airtime for free or they're being paid. Like if CBS Sports was randomly like, hey, yo, we need our Monday 7 p.m. slot. Here's whatever amount of money to cover it. Then absolutely. Sure. If the Pro Tour is making money on this, sure thing. Because, I mean, it at the end of the day, it's an OK exposure route because like I have CBS Sports. I'm not paying specifically for it. So I disagree with Brody saying it's like on ESPN Plus because I have CBS Sports, but I pay separately for ESPN Plus. So it will be on people's TVs, but you do have to just like stumble upon it and it's not on everyone's TV. So if we are paying anything for this, that's an awful use of money, in my opinion, because there's a lot of other marketing things that this could go towards. And speaking of marketing, I feel as though this show should have been marketed slightly differently to me prior to this episode, as I was making my efforts on my words and sentences coming to like a minute. And now that I understand we're going to 2 or 3 minutes, I have decided to use my filibuster here as my last moment on this show, last moment of the season, to talk about the injustice that I have felt from Trevor running the show here. But via first, you know,
can you mute
not going to a minute long when that was what was promised to us, to where I just timed someone up.
Is he muted? All right, Hunter is muted now.
Bro, my answers
were
hella short the first couple of questions.
Guys, don't respond to Hunter. He's muted on the actual feed now. They can't hear him. All right, we're gonna hop into our rapid fire round now, and Hunter, it will not be a part of it. Brody and Dustin are going to be in. So, Silas, transition us into our rapid fire round.
One thing we forgot to mention, Buffalo Wild Wings. Could be a wild factor. CBS Sports, Buffalo Wild Wings. It's in every single one. Wings, disc golf.
Can you also kick him?
Yeah. Oh, by the way, Brody, to answer your question, it's on Mondays. Mondays at 7.
All right, so we're just competing against Monday Night Football. All right.
We need to figure out how to synchronize our mutes because I knew he was muted in the main feed. I was just getting speech jammed.
I was still hearing him too.
I'm still here.
I still hear him.
Oh, now he's muted on the veto too. Sick. All right, into the rapid fire round.
I can just see him dancing around.
Into the rapid fire round now.
Hey, I respect him for that. I respect
Brody
him for
and Dustin, the final rapid fire of the season. Three topics, 60 seconds each. These ones are strictly
Wait,
maintained
60 or
by
45?
Time. Oh, sorry, 45. See, like I read
All
my
right,
script.
Just
want to
be clear before
yet.
I get wrecked. All right.
45. Yeah. Brody, would you like to go first or second?
Is it? This might be not allowed, but since it is the season finale, I think if you allow it, Trevor, I think we give the people what they want. And I think they want to see a Hunter Dustin showdown. So I will.
No, I'm not doing that.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I tried. All right. Sorry, Hunter.
We can maybe do a special episode based on the rules that because he did challenge me with this particular rule set of not knowing the questions ahead of time and no notes. So if we all want to do a special off-season episode,
that's a pay-per-view. That's a pay-per-view.
Oh, you're right. You're right.
On the CBS Sports Network.
I don't care.
Okay, so just say
one. Going first. So
I defer.
So you're going second. Okay.
I defer.
Dustin, you're going first. So talk a little bit about award voting. This year, as long as Hunter looked correctly this morning, there is no awards that are being voted on using any kind of statistic. Everything is some combination of voting, whether it be from the media, the players, or the fans. So my question is, do you like the subjective nature of postseason award voting, or do you rather they be more heavily weighted using statistics? Dustin?
Yeah, I mean, I think the award should be as objective as possible. So I think you should have a list of criteria, you know, such as wins, podium finishes, top five, top tens, average placement at events, average placement at majors, and try to have as good of a measure of consistency of performance as you possibly can. With that said, there's always going to be some subjectivity on what you weigh more, like how much does an elite win matter versus a major win, how much does a podium finish make up for a lack of wins. So there's always going to be some subjectivity on how you measure those stats. And you're also always going to deal with issues of like recency bias and things of that nature. But personally speaking, I would like to see it be as objective as possible. If we want to awards to like really have merit, it should be based on performance, and you measure that mostly with stats.
Fair enough. Dustin says numbers doesn't lie. He wants the numbers. He wants more. Brody, do you agree?
Well, I mean, I disagree. I don't think Dustin actually understands what he's saying, because you either have an objective thing of where it's simply this counts for this many points, this counts for this many points, and then you just add up the numbers and that is the winner. If that's what you want, I think that's terrible. I think the idea of it being subjective is people like Hunter has an idea of how much a major is worth. Dustin has an idea of how much a major is worth. Yes, we all are objectively looking at numbers to come up with our idea, but we're subjectively coming up with what those numbers mean to us. And I think that's what is fascinating. I think people think different things. You look at like the Heisman. Yeah, you can probably pinpoint most of the time who's going to win it in college football, but not every time. We get surprised every once in a while, and we see some first place votes for some other people. I think that's really interesting. The other thing too, real quick on this, winning it, I have 5 seconds. Winning it, there is no money or anything like that.
It was a 45 second time limit.
Oh,
things get hard when time limits get enforced.
I thought it was a minute.
I clarified 60 before we started.
Seconds, and then Dustin said, "Oh, is it 60?" I was like, "No, it's 45 seconds."
Can you give him his points back? I don't like this.
I didn't listen.
Cut him
off. I can't.
To be fair, though,
Silas stopped the clock at 59.99, so I did stop under a minute, and that's what.
Can I donate Brody points to put us back to even footing?
No, what happened. I'm very strict on my rules that I
change.
I don't
like it.
What was I doing when you were saying that? Because I don't even remember that conversation.
On another planet, I guess.
Maybe you were still watching Hunter dance on your screen or something.
I might have been.
It pained me to do it. I felt like I was setting off some kind of trap.
I'm just happy to see rules being enforced. I'm just happy rules are being enforced.
Yeah,
here.
See what I mean? Like I'm a very honest and fair judge in this game, and I never change rules. And they're always the same, and I write them down very specifically.
I've only been screwed out of 3 wins.
All right, we're gonna move on to the next topic here. Brody, you can go first and try and mount your comeback here. Which player will have the most work to do this offseason to turn things around next year? Who needs to be hustling in this offseason, needs to right the wrong going in next year the most? What do you think?
God, it's such a dark horse question, because obviously, like, it's objective of what you think. I'm gonna go out on a limb and go super dark horse pick with my player of the year, Calvin Heimberg. Simply for the fact that he has now had multiple seasons where he feels like he has gotten so close so many times. And I don't know what it is that he necessarily needs to work on. So maybe that's the most dark horse thing he needs to work on. But he just needs to figure out a way of how to win these majors and how to get it on the board. And so I'm going to go with him, because I think that's the most dark horse pick I could pick out of everyone. Because he is the best player on this planet, but he needs to work on the most offseason.
Come on, let him have it. Let him have it.
Unreal. I mean, fair enough.
You stopped the clock. I don't know what you want me to do.
Because I thought you were done talking.
Well,
I took advantage of me. nothing said after the clock stop was considered. Don't you love when they do that in like the presidential debates and stuff? They're like, please do not.
Please disregard any of those comments. Anything. Act like those did not happen.
Yeah. All right. Dustin, who do you think? Who needs to get on the grind this offseason?
I'm going to pick Katrina Allen. I think that's an obvious pick. She was great early in the season, winning Las Vegas Challenge, you know, doing well at Austin in the Champions Cup, the first major. She obviously won the Preserve. So she had like a pretty good start and kind of early summer session. But from August onward, her best finish was 20th at Throw Pink. And she had four finishes outside the top 25 and just did not look herself. She's clearly struggling on the result end. She's clearly had some issues on the putting green again, even though early in the season, it felt like she really had turned her putting around and looked excellent on the green. And she's also confirmed herself that something feels off about her backhand form. She's not confident in it. So whatever mental things that need to happen to try to get comfortable with the form, or whether it's physical stuff she needs to address, that's the things that I think she needs to be working on this offseason, because she should be a top player. She always has been.
Fair enough. Yeah, definitely. Definitely some soul searching to do for Kat to figure out how to get things back on track. All right, final topic of the season. Not really a disc golf related question. What was your favorite moment from debate night season one? Dustin.
Roll it.
Oh, you want us to play the clip?
You have a video?
We didn't have the clip.
We talked about this yesterday.
I didn't realize you wanted me to embed it. I thought you were just going to show it.
I thought that was unbelievable.
We'll let Brody go first, and I'll send it to Salas real quick. Don't worry, we're good.
We can wait a little bit. It'll take me a couple minutes.
Brody, go ahead. What was your favorite moment from the season?
Oh, I mean, my favorite moment of the season, let's be real, It's been the comment section. I think the comment section, reading the comments every single episode, seeing Hunter and Dustin just fight for their lives in the comment section. This goes out to all our wonderful viewers, all of our viewers out there. I love you all. Thank you so much for an incredible first season. I will say debate night starting at 7 o'clock in the morning for me. We might want to come up with a different name. But let me know in the comments what your guys' favorite part of season one is. Let in the comments down below. And then also real quick, because my time's over and Dustin's going to win this. This is a shout out to all those people at the beginning of the season that said they would come on the show and they never did. So if you're Terry Miller, if you're Brian Earhart, if you're Andrew Fish, I'm calling out a new guest list next year. Thank Let's you. Get some fresh blood in here and see what you guys are made of. Because under this minute and 45 seconds, it's going to be brutal next year.
Okay. Silas, are you going to be? Huh? Discord. Discord. I sent you on Discord. How did you do that?
Dude, he has, it's like hand gestures and stuff that like starts animation.
I will say, fireworks show.
I will say that my favorite moment from debate night season one was by far Brody accidentally triggering the hearts over his face. Like,
here's the thing.
I have a couple of honorable mentions.
We all know who the people's champ is. We all know who the people's champ is.
Oh, it's not working. The gesture's not activating. Oh, there it goes.
Oh, man.
All right, so if we can't play the clip, it's fine.
Salas is getting it.
Well, can I get some honorable mentions while I wait for the clip?
Yeah, you can.
Robbie C making fun of Sue and not realizing that it was a catfishing situation and like just calling him out for having a fake girlfriend was a pretty good moment. And then also some of Brody's most impassioned speeches. My favorite one was when we were arguing about like Ricky Wysocki and what he would want more. And then I just remember Brody saying, "You don't think people lie." And then he went on a tirade for about 45 seconds. It was brilliant.
I also liked it when Brady did the 1v1 debate and walked out to a song and nobody could hear it.
Yeah, that was a good one.
What was that? My intro music.
Huh?
You thought it was a psycho.
It won't go on the feed though? Yeah. Okay, then just play it. All right, roll clip. We can't hear it, but they can.
He's the guy that I want to take down next week. He caught me on a little bit of an off week, you know. I had this shoulder injury going on. Didn't let me get fully coherent, but I'm back. I'm well rested. All right. I'm ready.
Why
for
is
him
it so
week.
Small?
Yeah. Whenever he's back,
he will certainly return, and that'll be a matchup people will be looking forward to.
Several days later,
Dustin is yet again our champion, our first two-time champ. Congratulations, Dustin. Anything to say for your victory lap today?
Yeah, why don't you go up ahead, pull that two box up with me and Hunter real quick if you can.
Oh boy,
right. I'm gonna need you to send me this clip.
I need to look deep into this.
Oh,
man.
It's still
he's hiding. He's hiding.
Look at me. All right. You called me out last week. Be careful what you wish for, buddy. When you come for the king, you best not miss. Because look, this might be your channel, but this show's my house. All right.
Oh my God.
Why don't you go work on yourself a little bit? Save those shoulder excuses for your horrible putting performance in your next monthly match and leave me alone. All right. All right.
There you have it. There you have it. Now you have to see the clip. Shout out to Tech.
Yeah, can you,
Got our tech guys.
Mr. Beast is on the episode.
Whoa! Mr. Beast, put it in the thumbnail.
We can put him in the thumbnail.
All right, that's gonna do it for debate night, Dustin. You are the final winner of the season. Brody choked. Probably worse. Oh my gosh.
I mean, he's
everybody needs those next season.
He's the people's champion of this
episode.
That's
going to be mandated
sure.
Next season. Everybody has to have the gesture thing because that is so gesture. Funny. Gesture. I always say that wrong. I get made fun of for it a lot. He's learned all of them apparently too.
They're going hard with that new laptop, man.
make sure you check out Brody's Risk stream. He's streaming all the time. Twitch TV.
We're going to do a foundation risk game at some point whenever
some
you guys
point.
Are ready.
And also make sure to tune in next Thursday because debate night will be no more, but we are going to be starting the off-season podcast. And I think that's going to be a lot of fun. Make sure to check that link in the description, submit your disc golf stories, your best disc golf stories so that we can read them on air, talk about them, discuss, have a laugh, maybe have a cry, maybe get angry. I don't know. It should be a good time, but thanks for everybody, for tuning into debate night this season. Hopefully you enjoyed. More suggestions in the comments for next season would be appreciated. And we will see you then in February. Adios.